They presented to the Thief Got a Daughter. A Thief was appointed as staff software engineer at the IBM Windows Application Server Level 2 Customer Support in June 2003. In this capacity, he is responsible for technical support of the IBM Webster Application Server product. During his career, he has supported customers for web container components and IBM software development kit components. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Ashish.
Thanks, Ali. This is Ashish Kodasra. My email address is achodas@us.ibm.com. I invite you all to send me questions about this webcast if you have any after this presentation, if you don't able to cover in our question and answer sessions. With that, let's start on. This today's topic is best practices, setting up session replication in IBM WebSphere Application Server version 6.1. Move on to the slide number 2. Starting from beginning, we'll talk about briefly on understanding the HTTP session. Then we'll talk about the failover support and how the WebSphere application server solves this failover support. Then we'll go about one of the ways of solving this failover support method, which is the memory-to-memory replication. Then we'll talk about the two methods, two topologies that can be used to enable the memory-to-memory replication. The first is peer-to-peer, and then we'll discuss about the client-server topology. At the end, we'll discuss about the best practices and the tuning consideration while you configure memory-to-memory replications. Let's move on to the next slide, slide number 3. Let's discuss very quickly on what is the session means and what is the HTTP session object. In the typical view, as a logical view, the session is when the client or user sits on the browser and it accesses the web application in the series of requests, and all requests are interdependent. For example, the first request might be browsing the catalog of the item. Second request might be selecting the item. Third is adding the item into the shopping cart. The fourth might be checkout. Fifth may be logging in, and sixth may be purchasing information and things like that. So what I'm going to do is all these requests are interdependent on each other. The second or third request cannot be done if the first few requests has been done previously. So all this series of requests can be viewed as one session of that user. Okay? And all session, as each request are interdependent, web container needs a way of remembering the previous state of the user. And to how that can be possible is by using the HTTP session object, in which you can store the previous state of the user. So J2EE provides us with this cool object called the HTTP session object. Now, with that object, how the tracking can be possible is with the first request in your application code, you can create the session object by calling the request.getSession. We'll go to that in the next few slides. Once you create your session object, unique web container also creates a unique ID called the session ID. And with the first request, it sends that session ID back to the user. So now this session ID getting saved at the browser of the user. All the subsequent requests comes with that session ID. And with that session ID, web container will able to get the associated session for that user. So this is the mechanism happens into the J2EE vault. Various ways you can send, and the web container can send the session ID is, famous method is using the cookies. Another method is using the URL rewriting, and another method is SSL, which when the request is over the HTTPS. And as I mentioned, the famous example is of the application. And almost all web applications probably have to use the session object. And one of the famous examples is using this open card. Let's move on to the next slide, which is the slide number 4. With the brief description of the HTTP session object, now let's discuss the life cycle of this object and how we can use the session object into our applications. The first step is to get the HTTP object, and that can be done by using the get session method on your HTTP servlet request object. In your application code, in the servlet, in JSP, you always have the handle on the servlet request object. All you need to do is invoke this method on the request object, that is request.getSession. Now, with that method, web container will give you the object if session object if there is not exist. And it will give you the existing one if one is already exist for this user. Okay? So that's the first step. The second step, once you have the session object, you might want to use the setAttribute method, which intake two parameters, name and the value. Name as a string and value as any object. So you can name your attribute, say the name of the person or the user, and the value as his real name, for example, Atish. And you can save that into your session object with the setAttribute method. Then you can provide the feedback to the customer as per your business logic. For example, if I added the item in my cart, I added that item in my session for that user, and I provided the feedback saying that this item has been added to your shopping cart or something like that. Then you might also want to implement notify listeners object. So what that object are? This object, the HTTP session object, can implement this binding listeners object. Once you implement that, this listener object will be invoked right before the session invalidation happens. And how you can use it is, for example, a user has added few items into his session, into the shopping cart, and haven't had purchased it. Just close the browser. So when there is a time, after 30 minutes or whatever you configure to time out your session, at that time, this notify listener will fire. In that code, you might want to save that information so that you can send some promotional information to that user. Because you know this user might be interested in this item. So this kind of cool things you can do implementing the notify listener. And the last thing in the lifecycle of the session object, you want to invalidate it. You don't want to make that session object permanent into your memory, right? Because eventually you go out of memory then. So the good way of handling this is not even doing any invalidation in your code and let the web server session manager invalidate based on inactive timeout set into your session manager. That's the one way. Another way, simply you can call the session.invalidate method in your code. So that's the lifecycle of session manager. Let's move on to the slide number 5. This is the example code, which describes some of the life cycle that we discussed. The first line, what I'm doing here is I'm calling HTTP session as is equal to request.getSession, getting the session object. If this is my first request to this page, I'm going to get the new session object. Then I'm initializing one integer variable called is and initializing with the value 1. Then in the code, I'm checking if this session is a new session, I'm coming the first time or not. First time, it will go into the if statement, and simply I'm printing out to the screen, to the browser, that, hey, this is the new session, and I came this page for first time. And immediately after that, I'm setting the set attribute. I'm giving the name of my attribute to be number of hits, and I'm just saving the hit, as which is the integer object, to my session. I'm done. And that's it. That's going to be my first hit to this page. When I come back again and hit the same JSP page, I'm going to do the same thing. Get the session object. But this time, I'm going to get the existing one, because my request this time comes with the session ID, and web container give me the existing session this time. Now I have my session object. I again initialize my variable. Now when I check in my if statement, this time it returns false. This is not a new session, so I fall into the if else statement. Because this is the existing session, I directly retrieve the number of hits attribute from the session object using the s session.getAttribute method. Now I have the information that how many times I've been to this page before. Then I'm incrementing that to 1 in the next line, and then setting back that variable again to the session and printing the message back to the browser that this is an existing session and you hit this page for so many times. If this is the second time, I'll get the message that this is the second time. So basically, the purpose of showing this is how you can get the session object, how you can save the information to your session object, and how you can retrieve it. I'm not doing invalidation in this code. I let the WebSphere handle the invalidation, and I don't need to implement this notify listeners in this case. So far, before we go to the next slide, let's recap. We discussed on basics of HTTP session object. We discussed about the life cycle of the HTTP session object, and we kind of went through the example code, very simple example code, how the HTTP session can be used into the code. Let's move on to the next slide, which is slide number 6. Before we go to the distributed session, let's discuss briefly about the failover scenarios. In our production environment, we don't have the only one server running, right? We have the clusters. Maybe we have the 5 different application servers running, which is running the same application. All 5 are being load balanced by plugin, and all are handling the user's request. In this kind of scenario, let's say if one user went to the first application server and that server has created the session, if that user did the first 3 transactions, it has and information about the first 3 transactions has been saved into the session object. What if that application server died? If that application server crashed, plugin will route the next request to any other server in the cluster. That's fine. But when the request goes to that any other cluster, that cluster member don't have the session in their memory, right? Because that is created in another application server. So all the information previously being done by that user will be lost if you don't have the in that failover scenario. Now, how to handle this situation? How the WebSphere make sure the session don't lose that session information is using the distributed session. So let's now discuss about the distributed sessions. Session manager with the WebSphere application server can store the session related information in 3 different places. First, and by default, it saves into the memory. Very simple. When you create the session, it's in your JVM memory, right? The session manager can also store session information in the database, and that option is known as the database persistence session. That's the second option. And third way that session manager can store is in any other application server's instance. And this storage option is known as the memory-to-memory session replication. This is what we are going to discuss in depth in this presentation. The last 2 options, that is the database and the memory to memory, both are called the distributed session, because with these two settings, your session information is outside of the one JVM, which has created it. And once it's outside that JVM, if that JVM goes down, other JVMs can retrieve the session information from that distributed session. Okay? So by using the distributed session, we will solve the failover problems that we may face. Let's move on to the next slide, slide number 7. Now, let's discuss about the data replication service. This data replication service is an internal component of REST application server. And its function is nothing but to replicate data. Okay? This service is only available to the network deployment and the higher configurations. Session manager, dynamic cache services, and the stateful session bins are the consumers of the DRS. Meaning, these three services can use this DRS service to distribute its data and replicate its data. Now, how any service can use the DRS, data replication service, is by creating the replication domain. You can create the replication domain manually by going to the environment page, or you can even create automatically when you create the cluster. And we'll go there. So, let's go to the next slide, slide number 8. So, before we discuss on memory-to-memory replication, let's again recap our last two slides very quickly. After we discussed on the basics of the HTTP station object, we went to and discussed about the failover problem, and we slightly discussed on the distributed session, and also briefly discussed about the data replication service available with that with REST application server. With that, let's discuss one of the options to solve the failover support, and that's the memory-to-memory replication, which is the primary topic of this presentation. In the memory-to-memory replication, session data from owner server replicate in one or more other application server using the data replication service. Okay? So in this case, what happens is, when you configure your cluster to use the memory-to-memory replication, each cluster member replicates, meaning it sends its session data to some other application server. JVM memory, and that JVM memory will save the backup copy. Okay? How you can do that is by creating the replication domain. Creating the replication domain used by the data replication service. This configuration is very simple. All you need to do is create the replication domain and configure all your session managers which you want to be a part of the memory-to-memory replication, configure that all the JVMs to use that replication domain. And we'll go there when we follow the slides on how to configure the memory-to-memory. Now, when you make your server as a part of the replication domain, to use the memory-to-memory replication, you have three choices. How you want your JVM to run in the replication mode? The one way is you can run as a client mode. In this case, your JVM as a client can only send the copies of its own session to others. It cannot receive the session memory from other JVMs. If you configure your JVM to be the server mode, you can only receive the backup copy from others. You can't send your own. If you're running as a bot, you can do both, meaning you can send your own session information to somebody else. You can also receive somebody else's information and store it as a backup. Okay? So, because your JVM can run in these three different ways, there is a two different topologies possible with the memory-to-memory replication. The first one is peer-to-peer, and second one is client-server. capitalism. Let's move on to the slide number 9. And before we go to the peer-to-peer and the client-server topology, let's quickly discuss on the advantages of the memory-to-memory replication over the database persistence, because both solve the same problem. With the memory-to-memory replication, you have the configuration options, right? You have the peer-to-peer and the client-server, which we'll discuss later, but both of them have their own advantages and disadvantages with various situations. So you have the choice which one you can pick, which you don't have. There is no choice in the database replications. With the memory-to-memory, you eliminate the overhead of and the cost associated with maintaining your database. That's a very big advantage. It's kind of a cost saving. You don't need your database administrator and things like that just to save your session data. It also eliminates the single point of failure, okay, which can occur due to the database failure. And with the memory-to-memory, if your session information is sensitive, you can use the encrypted data transfer between the servers. With that, let's move on to the slide number 10 and discuss about the peer-to-peer topology. When you configure the peer-to-peer topology for the memory-to-memory replication, each server stores its own session, that's by default, and it also stores the backup from other servers. Okay? Each server acts as a client by retrieving the session from other server and acts as a server by providing the session to other application servers. So in this case, in the peer-to-peer topology, your own JVM, which are configured as a peer-to-peer, running in both the modes. So now my JVM is only running, all my JVMs in this topology only run as a board. All JVMs are client. It provides, it copies its own session data to others, and it also retrieves the others' information and stores it in my JVM memory and be a backup of each other. With this, all application servers in this topology can host the web applications, because being a client, I can store my session info somewhere else so that all the JVMs can host the web application and leverage the HTTP session. Thanks the changes to the HTTP session to something else and receives the backup copies. This is the most consolidated topology. That's because all the system parts are co-located. You don't need any extra processes. All you have is all your cluster. You don't have any other, you haven't added any other processes to specifically store the backup copies. Most stable implementation is achieved when all your node, each application servers, have a similar capability, CPU, memory, and so on, to handle the same workload. And we'll go on that, this particular topic, when we discuss the advantages and disadvantages at the end. So with the peer-to-peer, you really want to make sure that all of your cluster members are equally capable of handling the loads. Let's move on to the slide number 11. This is a pictorial representation of the typical peer-to-peer topology. In this case, I have three cluster members, one cluster having a three servers. Cluster A server 1, cluster A server 2, and cluster A server 3. All are sitting behind the HTTP server with the affinity. Okay? If you can see, this cluster 1's local data is saved as a backup in server 2. So server 1, being a client, sends its own session data to somebody else. And it being a server, it saves somebody else's data. In this case, it saves server 3's data to server 1. So as you can see, all servers are functioning as a client and server. Everybody has its own data, or everybody has backups of somebody else. And this is the example of one replica. And we'll go in detail later about the one replica and entire domain. Let's move on to the slide number 12 and discuss the hot payload. Now, the hot payload feature is a somewhat new feature that we introduced into the version 6 in our course. And this is only available for the peer-to-peer topology. And why we introduce it is because the plugin previously doesn't have the intelligence on knowing that where the backup copies are resides. Let's go back to one slide, and I'll explain why we introduced this topic. Let's go back to the slide number 11 for a moment. Okay, so in this case, the plugin sends the request, distributes the request to server 1, 2, and 3. Okay, now, if the first user came in and the request goes to server 1, that server created the session. Okay, and then that response sends back. Now, how many times that server user comes back? Plugin will send that user to the same server, server 1, because it has its, it has the session information. Now, if the server 1 dies, in this case, plugin can now send, plugin has a choice of sending the information either, the next request either to 2 and the 3. If the plugin decides to send it to server 2, then server 2 first checks into its local memory for the session, and obviously it will not find it because it's not its own, its session. So then server 2 will do the DRS call to get that session, that this must be the failover request and I better get the session information from DRS. Now when the DRS call has been made, in this case, with this example, DRS will quickly find the backup data because it resides into its own memory, right, and gives back to the server 2. And then server 2 quickly process the request and sends back the response. Cool. If the plugin decides to send the failover request to server 3, same thing happens, but when the DRS call has been made to get the session, DRS has to work a little harder to get the data from other application server. In this case, it has to go on wire and get the data from the server 2, again to the server 3, and then server 3 process the request and expect the response. In both the ways, request response will be done, but there is a little of performance impact because the plugin doesn't know when the, where the backup copy is, and that intelligence will be added by the hot failover. And let's go back to the slide number 12 again. So in the in this slide, I try to explain how the hot payload works. In the typical way, in as you can see, the JSON ID is comprised of three things: cache ID, first four digits, then session ID, then colon, and clone ID. When the request comes with the JSON ID, plugin simply finds the clone ID and then sends the request to that clone ID, and that's how it's used to manage the affinity. With hot failover functionality, only thing we change is the JSON ID is now comprised of cache ID, session ID, and the partition ID instead of clone ID. Now, each cluster member has its own partition ID. Okay? And initially, and there is a dynamic partition table that which HA manager generates and sends back to the plugin using the $WSP HTTP header. So in the healthy condition, you can the partition table looks like this, which has the entries of partition ID of clone 1, clone ID of clone 1, then partition ID of clone 2, clone ID of clone 2, and third entry is partition ID of clone 3, clone ID of clone 3. What the plugin does is reads the request, gets the partition ID from the request, map it into the partition table. In this case, in the healthy condition, it gets the clone ID of clone 1 and sends it, where it has the local copy. Now, if the server 1 fails, HA manager quickly generates a new partition ID. Because the HA manager knows where the backup copies are, it will update the partition table, and now the partition table looks like this. The blue is the change that it did. So what it did is, instead of clone 1, it puts the clone 2 in the partition table, which associates with the clone ID of 1. So next time when the request comes, plugin again does the same thing. It does the compares with the new partition table. And in that time, it maps to the clone 2, and the request goes to the clone 2. So that's how plugin maintains the, when the failover occurs, it sends the tries to send the request where the backup copy lies. And this feature is only available for peer-to-peer, and we'll see how why it is that in the few slides when we discuss on the client server. And this functionality is available after the plugin 602 or higher. Let's move on to the slide number 13, which describes on the configuring peer-to-peer replication. The configuration step is very, very simple with the 6.1. First step is to create the replication domain, and for all these steps, we're going to have the slide with the screen capture of the admin console. So if you don't get it in this slide, we'll definitely get it into the next. The first step is creating the replication domain. It has the three parameters that need to be configured. Configure request timeout, if you need an encryption time, and how many replicas. And then, once you created the replication domain, you can go to the each cluster member to the distributed environment setting memory to memory replication, and then select this replication domain, and then select in which way you want to run. In the peer-to-peer, you want to select the both client and server mode. Then you save your changes to the master configuration, and then you can start your server to pick up the, start your cluster to pick up the changes. Let's go to the slide number 14. This is going to be our example topology. The cluster A has the three servers, server 1, server 2, and server 3. Now, so we are in this configuration screenshots, we are going to use this topology. Let's go to the slide number 15. And before that, make sure we are on the same page. Yes. Great. So in this case, this is one of the options. You can configure your cluster to use the memory-to-memory replication in a one simple way. Is when you're creating the cluster, when you reach the first step, when you are providing the name of your cluster, look at the second checkmark, which is saying configure HTTP session memory-to-memory replication. So if you check that while you are creating the cluster, that's it. You don't need to do anything else. When you do the next, it will take care of creating your replication domain, associating all your cluster members to that replication domain, and by default, all your cluster members will be run in a both mode, which is the peer-to-peer topology. So that's one way of doing things. Let's move on to the slide number 16. If you haven't done that at the cluster creation time, you can always do it later by going to the environment replication domain and hitting the new entry. Here, you can provide the name of the replication domain, request timeout, and then if you need an encryption or not. And the last one is important, which is number of replica. Here, I have selected single replica. What that means is, in my cluster, how many copies of backup copies I want to save. Meaning, each server, how many copies of each server should have the backup. So, when we select a single replica, server 1 has one backup copy somewhere in the cluster, server 2 has one backup copy somewhere in the cluster, and so on. If you select the entire domain, what that means is, server 1 will have the backup on every other cluster members. And same thing for all the clusters. all the cluster members. The downside to using that is there is too many memory will be consumed, right? All the servers, all the JVMs in the cluster will have its own session data and also have session data of all other cluster members. So that might be not a good choice if there is a many session objects in your memory. Let's move on to the slide number 17. After you created the replication domain, you can simply navigate to application server name, session management, distributed session settings, then memory to memory replication, and in here you select the session replication replication domain as you just created, and then replication mode as both client and server, and then you save your configuration. You do this for all your cluster members, and then you let's move on to the slide number 18. And once you're done configuring for all your cluster members, all you do is you restart your application, your cluster, and you are done. You configure your peer-to-peer application domain. Very simple. Let's move on to the slide number 19. Now, as we know, what is the peer-to-peer and how we can set up the peer-to-peer replication, let's discuss about the advantages and the disadvantages it has. The advantages it has is there is no additional process or products are required to avoid the single point of failure. All you have is all your own cluster, right? This reduces the time and cost required to configure any additional application server processes, which you need in the client server mode. We'll discuss that about later. The disadvantage of this is it can consume large amount of memory. That's because each cluster member not only has its own session data, but it's also responsible for storing others' backup information, right? So it's kind of your JVM has to be capable enough of handling that much memory. Each cluster member should be capable enough to have the extra memory to store the backup data. The second disadvantage is it does not provide stable configuration if you have a cluster of only two members. And we'll discuss this. I'll come back to this point again at the last slide where we are discussing on the things to consider. Let's move on to the slide number 19. Slide number 20. And let's discuss about the client server topology. In this topology, we are kind of specifying either I'm running as a client or I'm running as a server. Right? The member of or the JVMs, which are the members of this topology, either they are running as a client or they are running as a server. Being a client, they can all the clients can only push back its own session data to servers. And being a server, the JVM, which is configured as a server, can only access the backup copies from others, and it cannot send its own. What that means is the servers cannot host the web application. They are the pure application server processes, which are only its solo purpose is to just store session information, backup session information. And it cannot provide any other additional, cannot handle any additional load. All the clients are the can host the web application because they can distribute its own sessions for the failover purpose. Backup data is always isolated into the separate JVM. Now, client replicates will contain only local session data. So now in this case, all clients will only have its own local data. It doesn't have any other information because they are only running as a client. In this case, one point should be considered is when you configure this situation, you should make sure your server cluster, server should be started first before you start your client. if you client, start your client first, you may lose the data because, you know, as soon as you start your client, it starts pushing back the session information to servers. And server, if the servers are not running, you might lose the information. Let's move on to the slide number 21. This is the pictorial representation of the client-server topology. We have the first cluster, cluster A. He has the 3 members. Now we added the another cluster, cluster B, which has the 2 members. Now we added the server 4 and server 5. In this case, cluster A, all the members of cluster A are running as a client. And all the members of the cluster B are running as a server. So client push back all its local data to the servers, and on the, if you notice from the picture, the server cluster B, which is the server cluster, has only the backup data, and the client cluster only has its own local data. So in this case, if the failure occurs, for example, if the server 1 crashes, then the next request for server 1 will go to server 2 or 3. In this case, server 2 or 3 has to retrieve the session information from one of the backup servers. In this case, we have the two backup servers because the purpose is to provide the failover support of in the server cluster itself. If we have only one server cluster, then also we are having the possibility of hitting the single point of failure, right? So at least we need two JVMs in the server cluster. So in this case, because the backup is always going to be remote, the hot failover doesn't make sense, as we discussed previously. And that's the reason the hot failover is only for the peer-to-peer topology, not for the client server. In this case, whenever the plugin will fail over for the either to server 2 or server 3, they have to go to the backup servers to get the data. Let's move on to the slide number 22. Now this is going to be our example topology while we discuss about how to configure the client server. We added the cluster B, which has server 4 and server 5, and our cluster A remains the same. Let's move on to the slide number 23, which is basically have the same slide which we discussed before, how to create the replication domain. Here we created the replication domain same way, name the replication domain as a session replica. Let's move on to the slide number 24. In this case, we moved to the cluster A first member and configured the first member to use the session replica as a replication domain and configure this member as a client only. And we did that for all our cluster A members, which is cluster A server 1, cluster A server 2, and cluster A server 3. We are going to do the same thing and save this information. Then we move on to the cluster B members and we go through the same path, that is session manager, distributed environment setting, and memory to memory replication, and configure all the members of cluster B to be using the same replication domain, but now I'm running as a server only. Okay? Once I'm done with configuring all the cluster member of cluster B, then next slide number 26, I started the cluster B first, and then I started the cluster A later. And that, I think, slide number 27. Move on to the slide number 27, please. Yes. And that's the slide number 27. We started the second step is the cluster A, which is the client cluster. And we are done. Means we configured the client server memory to memory replication. Let's move on to the slide number 28, which is advantages and disadvantages of client and server. This particular topology. The advantage of this topology is it clearly distinguishes the role. Either I am the client or I am the server. The second advantage is reduces the consumption of memory on each application server. And that's the biggest advantage with the client server. Sometimes, and being in support, I see majority of time the out-of-memory situation happens due to the overconsumption of the session object. And that's because of the peer-to-peer topology configured with an entire domain or, the timeout setup really large. But with this topology, you are only responsible, all your KVMs are responsible to only store your own sessions, right? All the backup copies will be in your server. So basically, each KVM reduces the consumption of memory. That's the better performance right there because of the low memory consumption on the real clusters, which is serving the request. This also allows the recycle of backup servers. When your client server is healthy, running fine, in some reason, if you need to recycle your server, you can do that without impacting anything. And this is a better choice if your hardware varies across the cluster. Now let's go back to that point when I mentioned when you are considering peer-to-peer, you better make sure all your JVMs are equally capable. The reason is, if, for example, one of your cluster members is highly capable with the CPU and memory, and you configure it to, because you can able to choose the weight of that server, you provided higher load, meaning you configured it to handle maybe 1,000 users. Other cluster member may be weak, and you configured it to be 200 users, right? When you configure it as a peer-to-peer, and both are in the same peer-to-peer mode, what happens is, at the higher load, the smaller machine, which is not much capable, also has to handle the backup copies from the powerful machine. So in that case, it has its own 200 users, but it also has to handle the 1,000 user backup, which is from the another server in its memory. And in that case, your calculation doesn't really work well, and that might fail. So in the peer-to-peer, it's the best topology can be achieved when you have the equally capable machine. This is not the limitation with the client server, because in the client server mode, the clients are not responsible of stealing the backup copies. The disadvantages of this topology is additional application server has to be configured and maintained, and that costs money. Need multiple replication servers to avoid the single point of failure. So when you configure it, you better make sure you at least have two servers, so that if one server dies, you still have another one up and running to support the failover. Let's move on to the slide number 29 and discuss about the best practice. The best practice is when you configure the memory-to-memory replication is the all session managers connected to the same replication domain should use the same topology. For example, in simple word, either you follow peer-to-peer or either you follow the client server. In your application domain, it is not possible, it's not a good idea to have some machines running as a both and some running as a client and some running as a server. No, that's not possible, and that's not, you should not do it. All your KVMs, part of the same replication domain, either all are running as a both or all are running as a client or server. Second best practice point I mentioned here is separate replication domain, use of separate replication domain for each consumer. As we discussed the data replication slide, DRS and the replication domain can be used to replicate session, Dynacache, session bin, stateful session bin things, right? So it's always a best practice to create a separate replication domain for each consumer. For the session manager, you should have the separate replication domain. For the Dynacache, you should have the separate replication domain. You can combine session manager and the stateful session bin in the one replication domain. Okay. Now, in the fourth point, what I mentioned here is little, the language is little tricky, but the bottom line for the fourth point is you have a choice. And with the session manager, you must be familiar, you should be familiar that the session manager configuration, you can do it server level, you can also do it application level, and you can also do it the web module level. So when you have this flexibility and you can override your setting, basically you have to again make sure the first point, right? If you are overwriting the session management setting at the application level or the web module level, you better make sure that your JVM or whenever you select the replication domain, you only select the same kind of topology. Also, in my last point, as you have this flexibility of overriding your session management configuration at various levels, it's not recommended if some of your web modules using the client server and some of your web modules in the same cluster using the peer-to-peer topology. It's kind of a messy situation. So to make it simple, it's not that you cannot do it, but it's kind of creating more problems. So it's highly recommended that you don't override the session management setting for this memory-to-memory replication. Let's move on to the slide number 30. This is about the tuning disk. When you configure your memory-to-memory replication, you have this option on how frequently you want to push the backup data. Okay? There are five different ways you can select. Very high, high, medium, and low. Very high means there is 300 seconds. Every 300 seconds, you are pushing back your session information to backup. So you have the lake of 300 seconds. In this case, the efficiency performance is high because you are not, ERS is not working harder. It just works every 300 seconds. You can increase the frequency by doing high, medium, and low. You can always do the custom. And let's move on to the slide number 31 and discuss about the custom. When you select the custom, you have the choice of selecting the end of servlet service method, which is at the every end of the request service method, you are pushing back the data. And in the right content, you have the choice of if you want to push only the updated attributes or you want to entirely push all the session attributes. So that's about the tuning tips. You, based on how much accuracy you want and how much performance you are worried about, you can have the selection in this two setting. Let's move on to the slide number 32. Things to consider. When you are configuring the session manager, on your left-hand side, you have you might have been familiar in the admin console, you get to these two configuration parameters, maximum in-memory session count and session timeout. And also you have the allow overflow. What that means is when you check that box, basically whatever you configure first doesn't make sense, meaning you are allowing to overflow the session, which is more than 1,000 users. You are allowing it. If you don't check it, you are kind of limiting your number of users. You don't want to create more than 1,000 users in your memory. So the point here is, once you enable the memory-to-memory replication, your allow overflow is always true. If you check it or not, it's always true. What happens here is, you are really, the first parameters really still make sense, meaning if in this case your server in your local memory, you only have 1,000, but once the 1,001 user come in, you still allow them, but that 1,001 session information will be stored only in the backup. You don't have in your local memory. So that's how it's always allow overflow is true. Okay. So if in this case, if the backup server goes down, if you are healthy, but if you are running in an overflow situation, say the server 1 in our example has 1005 users.
Okay?
So extra five users being saved into the server two in our peer-to-peer example. Now, if even though I'm running fine, server one is fine, if the server goes two goes down, my five extra users will be lost. So these things should be things to consider. That whenever you are with the memory to memory, your allow overflow is always true, and you are always running at the risk that your backup goes down, then you might be in trouble. Some of your user might be in trouble. Also, with the memory to memory, your invalidation thread runs on the backup server once your memory to memory replication is enabled. Right? So, with the peer-to-peer topology, coming back to the point that the disadvantage I mentioned, peer-to-peer topology with two cluster members, if one goes down, the invalidation will not occur onto the another one. So you eventually run out of memory. And that's why it's not a stable situation. In the member with the three, if one goes down, the IT manager will give the backup of the second, move the backup from of the first one to the third one, and then you still have your invalidation thread will run on your backup, and you should be fine. Let's move on to the slide number 33. These are all the additional information and all other resources, the link to the other resources that you can go and find useful information. And let's move on to slide number 34, and I'll hand back to Azil for any questions and answers.
Right. Thank you, Ajit, for a great presentation.
And we'll hear first from Rick Zeller with Bank of America. Mr. Zeller?
Yes, I was wondering if the replication works well over long distances. Let's say you have setups in New York and setups in California, and it fails over to the from California to New York, just to use an example. Is the timing an issue there, or does it still replicate quite well across the country?
Okay, so that your question is, if you have your cluster set up across the United States, for example, in the different geographic locations, one in the California and one in the New York across on the and if one of the cluster member in the New York fails, then the request should be handled by the one in the California, right? And how efficient it is. Am I understanding your question correctly?
Yeah, for example, let's say the customer just happened to bounce over to the other data center. So they're going to land on a clone over there, and it's going to say, whoa, I need to grab some session replica data. So, just wondering how the performance...
The performance is generally in the session, it's depend on how much information you have stored into the session. And generally, if that information is not that much, it doesn't take that long. Even you don't feel it if you failed over. But if your application storing a lot of data in your session, maybe big reports and things like in megabytes of data in your session, then you will see the performance impact when your user fails over to some in other cluster member, because in that case your the replication has to done for entire session data, and if the data is bigger, obviously you will see the difference. And again, if your topology is client server, right? In that case, you always have to have grab the data from the server, which impacts the little performance. But if you are configured as a peer-to-peer, then you sometimes don't even feel it because your peer already has the backup data in its own memory. And in that case, you don't feel any difference.
But say the customer was working in California and then they quickly bounced to New York. Is it instantaneously available in New York, or isn't there several seconds lag at least?
Well, if your both the server has been configured as a peer-to-peer, that the backup copy is being copied all the time to your New York also, right? So in that case, your New York already has the data. It doesn't wait till it's a failover, right? So whenever it fails over to the New York, that JVM already has it, and it solves it from its own memory. Make sense?
Yeah, kind of. I'm just thinking in terms of latency that, you know, would it...
Right. What
would it take some time to copy all that data, especially if you have thousands of users, at, you know, hitting your servers at once?
Right. What happens here is when you configure the replication happens every few seconds. Okay? So as you are working, like if you are, if I'm a user, I'm building up my session objects, right? So slowly, if I'm working, my replication DRS is also working in the backside, and it is replicating my data to the other servers, right? So it's not happening at once. It is continuously happening in the background as well as I'm working. And suddenly if I bounce back to the other one has the data already.
Even though the last transaction you just did, which may have been like a half a second earlier.
Yes. And that's where it comes into the picture that I mentioned about the tuning consideration, right? If you have configured that to be higher, then you might not have the last 300 second data because the pushing, the replication, last replication happened before 300 seconds. If you have configured it to be as the end of service method, then you will have the up-to-date data. So it's kind of trade-off. How accurate data you want when your user bounce back and how much performance you, because if you want accurate data, your DRS has to work harder to replicate data very, very frequently, right? And in that case, your performance, in overall performance, will be a little bit lower.
Okay, thanks. I'll let somebody else ask some questions. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll hear next from George Trewick of Protective Life.
My question is related to what happens in a failover situation. Let's say if you have three servers in a cluster with memory-to-memory replication, and let's say you have an equal number of users on each server. Let's just say 10 on each server. Let's say server one goes offline, and those 10 users are sent to get their session data, sent their requests are basically sent to one of the other two servers that are left. When server one comes back online, do those sessions go back automatically, or does some kind of load balancing algorithm take over? How does that work?
Yes, good, very good question. In when the server one comes back up, all its failover requests will be restored back to the server one. Right? So, for example, if in the three server environment, if the one goes down, and all are handling 10 requests, then the 10 requests of that first one will be distributed across the two and three. Right? As soon as the server one comes back again, all that 10 requests again goes back to the first one. And that's the intelligence that the plugin has to maintain the, again, affinity.
Okay.
Okay, and another, to add to your question, if you are configured as a peer-to-peer, okay, in that case, you're all the, when the server one fails, so goes down, all the requests of server one will go to server two, in our example, because the server two has the backup copy. In that case, you don't, the all the failover requests will not have, will not be distributed across all, but all will go to the one.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
And we'll take our next question from Raj Bola with Proficient Inc.
Hi. I had a question related to the decision tracking mechanism.
Uh-huh.
We had like URL rewriting and cookies enabling cookies, and those are the two decision tracking mechanisms that we usually use. Which one is the most effective one?
Well, the URL rewriting can be considered most effective one because it is not depending on the browser setting. If, as a user, being a conservative, if I configure my browser to not accept the cookies, in that case, your application will still work because you are using the URL rewriting. What happens there is you kind of putting your JSON ID in your URL itself. You're writing your inside your URL, and you're not depending on the browser to save that small cookie text file to the browser.
Thanks. And is there any way that we can suppress the clone ID in the URL?
In the clone ID?
Yeah, I mean, let's say we enable URL rewriting, right?
Right.
And in the URL, there is a session ID equal to some characters, and then
the clone ID.
And then there is a clone ID, right?
Right.
Can we suppress the clone ID? In the sense, I don't want to put that information in the URL.
There is with URL rewriting, there is not any other option that you can do, because with the memory-to-memory replication, right, the plugin really needs to know where this request to be sent, and plugin can only get that information from the clone ID, right?
Yeah.
So with the URL rewriting, with the J2E spec, it has to be in the URL, right? So I don't think any other way to suppress it while you are using the rewriting.
Thanks.
So we'll take our next question from Chad Doty with Ecolab.
We run both WebSphere portal on 5.1 along with WebSphere 6.1 on other servers, and our applications flow back and forth. Can the sessions use this method to replicate between those two environments?
With the 6.1, with the replication domain, there is a backward compatibility also exists. And there is a specific step that you need to take, and I think it's documented in the info center in the migration and migration guide. Using that step, you can configure your 6.1 server and 5.1 server talking with each other. And there is a specific step, because 5.1 has a different way of configuring the memory to memory, and 6.1 has a different way of doing it.
Okay. And was this available just for 6.1, or was it also available in 6.0?
6.0 also. We always do the backward compatibility.
All right. Thank you.
And next we'll hear from Hannah Barber with Manulife Financial.
Hi. My question is regarding WebSphere Portal. We are using WebSphere Portal 6.02 and WebSphere version 6.0.
Mm-hmm.
As well, we have a situation where our portal JVMs are using high memory. Like we have 60 plus customized applications on each JVM, and we have the portal vertically clustered. So we are thinking to split our applications across multiple clusters. But the question I have is, we are not sure how can we get the portlet from cluster A to talk and communicate with the application on cluster B.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Our developers are thinking of having the WebSphere actually handle the sessions, and then from that point we'll have the memory-to-memory replication to talk between these two clusters. Otherwise, the other alternative that I have been investigating is using the web service remote portlet. So I'm just wondering if you have any experience with that, or if you have seen any customers using that type.
One thing is when you are, because you have many applications in a cluster, right?
Yes.
And you want to divide that many applications in two different clusters, right? I'm not sure, once you do that, why you need to intercommunicate between this, because the applications should be independent with each other, okay?
The applications are actually tied, like they need to communicate, like from one portlet to another. I need to pass information back and forth between these portlets to get the final results to the user.
Okay. So in that case, if you need to share the information, the session replication might be one of the way to do it. Means if you both the cluster can be configured into the one replication domain, and both can see the session. not, it can be doable, but it, I feel it's not the right way to do it. Meaning, if the application are depending on each other, it's better to be in the one cluster. Now, if you are doing this because you are facing some memory more consumption issues, correct?
Right.
So let's attack on that. Why you are experiencing the more memory consumption? Which kind of session replications you are configured? If it is a peer-to-peer, you can easily move it to the client server and your memory consumption will dramatically go down. And you all will be happy just by doing that move. So basically, when you divide your interdependent application to two different clusters, it's, I don't feel it's a good practice. But you should be getting the going to the analyzing what is consuming more memory, and you can attack that to simplify this problem.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And as a reminder to everyone, that is star one if you have a question today. And we'll hear next from Lucas Varadani with State of Wisconsin.
Hi, I have a question. This is related to the second question that George has placed. So when the server one, which is getting the request, storing the session that is in peer-to-peer topology, when it stores all the session information on the other servers like server 2 and server 3, that server 1 goes down and comes back again. So what happens to the server 1 session, which was a backup on server 2 and server 3, those will get pushed back to server 1?
Yeah. Good question, though. What happens is, with the 6th one, if you're familiar, there is the HA manager always running and watching the cluster, right, and making sure all the high availability stuff. And HA manager is the one which is balancing all these backup copies. So as long as whenever the server 1 goes down, HA manager is the first one who detects that and creates the new partition table thanks to the plugin and things like that, okay? So, and then it also rearranges all the backup copies. For example, if the server 1 was storing the server 3's backup data, right? If the server 1 goes down, now there is a need of server 3 to have the backup copy somewhere else, right? The HA manager quickly makes the server 2 as a backup of server 3 in our example, right? And then whenever the server 1 comes back up again, it again does the reshuffling of the backup copies and distribute along the cluster.
But what about the server 1, its local copy will be gone by the time it's been down, and by the time it comes back, it will get from HA manager the copy of the server 1 from server 2 and server 3 as a backup which is stored on those servers. And at that same time, when other users are coming in for different applications or maybe the same application, it creates a new local copy, and there is also a backup copy of the same server on other server 2 and server 3, so that they, how do that manage?
Good. Say the server 1 is down, okay? Now it's slowly coming back up. Before the server, we WebSphere announced the server 1 is open for e-business.
Uh-huh.
Underneath, the before it does that, the server 1 now initializing, right? At that moment, the backup copy of server 1 was in the server 2, which is currently run, okay? So before we announce that is to be open for e-business, HA manager using the DRS will copy all the session information from the backup copy and put it to the server 1.
Okay?
Okay? So now when we announce the server 1 is up and running again and ready to take their load, we again get all the local copy which we have lost, right, before from the backup copy, and now we are ready to roll again. So we are not losing anything here.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we'll hear now from Darryl Blair with Johnson Controls.
Hello.
Hey.
Very good topic. We've actually switched from peer-to-peer to client-server. And had wonderful results, including memory consumption, which that one customer was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I had a question on, when we did create the two application servers to be the backup, store for these sessions, we created them in the same cluster. Is that okay?
That's perfectly fine, and that's what I mentioned in my example as well. And that makes sense too. Both of your server, you have one cluster of your server which has two members, and both are servers, correct?
Correct.
That's perfectly good, and that's what I expect.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And it appears that's all the questions we have at this time.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebShare Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Ashish, for presenting today.
Thank you very much.